Okay, good morning once again. It's very nice to see all the partners present here, and I think it's a good opportunity for all of us to be together these 3 days, and also gives us, I think, quite a good time for interaction and also sharing our experiences. I have also been asked by Dr. Eknath, the project coordinator, to share some of our approaches at BFOSHC on climate change-related studies, and also to touch upon the role of BFOSHC in this particular project. So what I'm going to do is, in the first half of the presentation, I've selected two projects, not aquaclimate, but two other projects that we have just completed. So I would like to follow a different approach, go a little bit into detail those two projects, and share the methodologies. And these two projects have got very good feedback. And so we have now, in the third phase, we just launched a very large third phase program in India. So I'll just go through that. We all know that methodologies or approaches, they can vary depending on, you know, the objectives of the project, the type of the project, especially in terms of how much resources you have, how much time you have for this particular project. So I think depending on that, we need to plan. At BFOSHC, we have quite a large portfolio of projects related to climate change studies. We focus quite a lot on Arctic agriculture. We have about 7 centers spread out through the different parts of Norway. We are focusing quite a lot on problems related to climate change and Arctic agriculture. But we also have quite a lot of activities outside Norway. In Europe, for example, we are now coordinating one of the largest EU projects so far on groundwater, climate change and groundwater related. It's about 80 million kroners project involving 26 different countries. And similarly in Asia, we have currently 5 different projects going on climate change related studies, very similar to the one we have, the aquaclimate. When we talk about climate change, we all agree that it's a complex subject. You know, it's a lot of complexity involved. And so any methodology to address this kind of complex subject should be quite systematic. We need to take into consideration the different disciplines, because we have to address the environmental vulnerability, the socio-economic vulnerability. So we need to take different disciplines into consideration. And we know that there are different sectors that will be simultaneously affected, and different administrative provinces. So we have to also involve different sectors when we are planning these projects. The first and foremost point or step, in my view, is to develop an integrated project framework. That is to develop the different components within this project. How do you link this project, these components, the various inputs, for example, data inputs, etc., that should go into the components, and the various outputs. And the next stage is to identify the different tools for assessment we have at our disposal. I think in climate change studies, there are several tools. What kind of tools do we take for the assessment? In our projects, piloting adaptation measures has been an integral part of the project. And that has been done for 2 reasons. One is, when you pilot the adaptation, some of the selected adaptation measures that you already know, it motivates the farmers to actively be part of the project. At the same time, it's also an on-farm training. You know, when you're actually doing some piloting adaptation measures, that gives an opportunity for farmers to actually see how the adaptations take place. Stakeholder involvement, in my view, is very important, essential component in climate change-related projects. And also to have a good dissemination plan, because you might come up with good results, but if you don't disseminate to the targeted groups, and I don't think we'll be, you know, doing our job completely. Capacity building. We have been having a lot of activities in our projects as part of the project itself, because as we are doing these projects, several times we have experienced that it's not only just asking farmers or managers about information related, but they would also like to get engaged. They would also like to be part of this, you know, and when you talk about replication and upscaling of these kind of things, you know, capacity building along with the projects is also very important. And last but not least is, how do we link the results from the scientific, you know, the various tasks that we do to the policy and the policy uptake. So I'm going to take two projects. One is this particular project called Clima Water. We just completed this in February this year. This is a project which we have taken up in central part of India. It's a very large basin. And this is basically looking at the impact of climate change on how a river basin and the water resources within the basin will be impacted. When I talk about integrated framework, this is the first step. It looks quite easy, or you know, it looks simple on the paper, but it's a lot of effort and time involved in developing this kind of framework. And as you see here, due to limitations in the project and also due to large area that we have to cover, there are certain tasks that we do at a river basin level, for example, the climate scenarios, and then how do we downscale that? And also other tasks, for example, estimating water use efficiency at the plot level, at the farm level, which is very important in this particular project. What kind of water resource estimations are to be made, and then extrapolate the results. We just had a discussion on what is the justification for extrapolation of results based on, you know, few farmer surveys or plot surveys, etc. Here in this particular case, what we did was we took representative areas within a particular basin, and then we tried to estimate the water use efficiency for these representative areas, and then try to upscale to that particular sub-basin, but not to the basin. So here in this case, two things are important. One is the different components, how the different components are linked, and also the flow of arrows is important, because how do the outputs from one component are taken as inputs into the next. And at the same time, the issue of scale is important, because when you talk about a river basin, we need to upscale some results, and similarly, you know, downscale other results based on how we are doing it. This is another project which is again focusing just like on aquaculture. Here we are focusing on climate change and rice cultivation, because it's an important crop, major crop in most of the Asian countries, and also major water user. So when we talk about future precipitation and temperature changes, it's going to have a lot of impact and how we do that. This is the framework for this particular project. So I'm simultaneously referring to two projects here. So in this case, you can clearly see the components. For example, you have the climate modeling component. And from there, you take the outputs. Outputs are going into the SWOT model, which is a hydrology model. And simultaneously, the EPIC model, which is a crop model. So we are trying to develop hydrology and cropping scenarios for the corresponding climate scenarios for the next 10 years or 20 years based on the needs of the project. And then looking at these scenarios, we try to identify what are the adaptation measures that can be introduced in order to cope or sustain production or increase production at the particular scenarios in the future. Once the assessment is done, the next level is to plan the adaptation measures. So here, if you see, you have the assessment, you have the hydrology assessment here using SWOT model. Then you have the economic models doing the socio-economic vulnerability assessment. And once the vulnerability is determined from both the components, then you look at what adaptation options are available and how we need to, you know, develop correspondent to the vulnerability. For example, here we are talking about water use efficiency, crop insurance, etc., which are also some of the measures that we have seen in our particular project as well. And once the adaptation options are available or identified, then we need to look at the social acceptability, we need to look at the economic viability, the investment options, etc., and based on that, you know, we try to develop further, you know, the policy recommendations, etc. This is also called as a low-regret adaptation approach, which fits very well into the context, especially in the Asian context, where the resources for investments are limited and where, you know, the risk-taking is also quite limited. So the investments are actually low. So we need to look at some of the options which are locally adaptable, which are simple, and which not involve much technology. These are some of the outputs. Once the climate scenarios are predicted, then we go to the next level. That is the predictions for the 2020 or 2050. So this is for every 10 years predictions. both changes in rainfall, changes in temperature, etc. This is the next stage where you, from the outputs, the climate scenario outputs, then we try to look at the corresponding hydrology responses in the basin, and then based on that, you know, what will be the predictions, you know, the yield predictions. For example, in this case, the rice yield in the two seasons based on the different, you know, for example, the current 2020 or 2030, 2050, etc. What will be, you know, if the current production patterns continue, if there are any interventions. So these kind of scenarios can be developed. But as we already discussed now, that some of these are projections, so we need to be careful to look at, you know, what kind of assumptions we have taken into consideration. So further, these are just some trends to give us, you know, what will be the picture, and then based on how much need details we have to go, we need to further get down to that detail level. As I said, demonstrating or piloting adaptation measures is one of our integral components. We have been doing that, and that has given us very good response. In this case, we are looking at two different systems of rice production. You know, the paddy rice, the transplanted rice production here, and what are the you know, scenario given the current predictions, and then if you adapt an alternative system, the system of rice intensification, what will be the yield advantage and what will be the, you know, future. In fact, in one of the provinces we are working, the government has already come up with a policy saying that in the next 10 years the area under rice should shift from paddy rice to system of rice intensification. So the policy has already come in. So we feel that we have come, we are at the right stage now, and we are able to give some kind of recommendations to the government for uptake. These are some of the scenarios, basin level. I will not go into the detail, but just to show that, you know, things can be, scenarios can be developed at different scales. This is the vulnerability index, socioeconomic vulnerability index for the entire basin. This also helps the some these kind of scenarios gives you know, good situation mapping, so that the planners or whoever is dealing with can try to plan the adaptation based on this kind of vulnerability assessment. Again, this is a these are broad projections, so we need to be based on the need go into more details. Here in this case, we have been also taking up quite a lot of capacity building activities as part of the project programs. In this case, we are building the capacity of a lot of managers in this field for actually using the models, interpreting the models, and also because once the project is over, it is up to them, and they need to be in a position to further take up these kind of studies in other areas. And that's also one of the aim of the project, that, you know, the sustainability issue, you know, how do we make sure that once the project is completed, that the managers or the technical people in the government can take up these outputs and can themselves do the modeling, or can themselves develop these kind of scenarios. Dissemination is very important. We have been focusing quite a lot in our projects. This is a end product. We have published a book from one of our projects released in February this year. We tried to highlight these events, and it has been quite useful for us to bring the results to the attention of the highest authorities. In this case, we organized the workshop in Delhi. We invited a lot of heads of national missions. So we got quite a lot of response, and so that, you know, some of the results from these projects can be taken up by the highest policymakers. Here we have invited our minister from Norway, the earlier Minister for Development, and also the Indian minister and the ambassador here. So this kind of events help us to bring a lot of attention and also to disseminate our results to the, you know, the concerned officials or the people. This is again another workshops. This actually we invited the chairperson of IPCC, Dr. Pachauri, at this workshop last year. And we also had the Indian Minister for Water Resources, and who's also a high-profile minister, our own minister. And at the regional level, it's important to interact with the regional politicians. So 2 years back, we had the Minister for Agriculture from Norway visiting some of our areas. And as a result of that, we also had very, very good coverage in the national newspapers. and also the local newspapers, which are read widely by farmers. So I'm just trying to highlight that dissemination at different levels can also be useful and also to bring the project results to the right people. And as a result of this, we have been invited now in the third phase by the provincial governments to be part of the development of the state, the climate adaptation plans for both the provinces. So that has been one of the main outcomes of these projects. These are some of the outputs. I'll not go into the detail, number of publications, etc. But also, as I said, we have been now involved in the drafting of the adaptation plans as a result of the publicity we got from these projects. Now, I think with that, I would move to, you know, the second part of the presentation, very briefly on our role. Some of this has already been discussed by Patrick, so I'll just briefly go through that. We have been very closely associated with other partners in the development of the methodology in this project, and specifically to look at the socioeconomic vulnerability assessment, developing indicators, to map the adaptive capacity of small-scale farmers, organizing stakeholder workshops, and also finally to draft the policy briefs and other outputs in this project. Just to mention, again, re-emphasize that if someone asks me what is the important contribution from this project, I would first point out to the methodology that we have used, and that could be one of the good outputs from this project. And here you see we have organized almost 9 stakeholder workshops. A lot of time and energy is needed in organizing these kind of workshops. But from our experience, we have seen that it has been wide representation. This was in Kanto, for example, almost 20 organizations represented. And for some of these organizations, it was the first time to meet on an issue like this in aquaculture you know, area. So they also felt that, you know, it was very good, these kind of events, for sharing knowledge, for, you know, networking themselves, and also to know what others are doing. Because a lot of times at the provincial level, number of departments or sectors are doing the same things without knowing, you know, each other. So I think these kind of events are important, and that's what the project has facilitated. And also it has generated new networks from my experience. Focus group discussions, much smaller, easier to organize. And we have organized almost 20 to 25 focus group in this particular project. And these also have generated a lot of information, and farmers have been very active. They have been participating quite actively in most of these workshops. It has generated a number of outputs from these activities. And for example, if you see a lot of policy briefs or other technical briefs we have produced, have inputs from these kind of activities as well. And besides, as Patrick mentioned, we had done almost about 1,000 farmer surveys. That's quite a lot of information. And a number of variables were covered to define the socioeconomic profile, what kind of capacity do farmers have, what's the vulnerability, etc. So that gives us a very good information base to develop further. And I don't think we have used all the data collected in analyzing, so there's a lot of data still available. Overall outputs, I'm not going into details. We have seen some of these outputs already. Just to mention that, you know, it has generated quite a lot of outputs in terms of reports, articles, etc. Coming to socioeconomic vulnerability assessment, the general trends, I'm not going into details again. Just to mention that we did see some correlation between the socioeconomic state and also the vulnerability and adaptive capacity of farmers. We have seen that in all cases, women were involved in various activities. So it's important to see how their role will be in the future in adaptation planning. From our experience in these cases, as of now, it is not very much defined. And I think there is a lot of potential for improving their role in the future in the adaptation planning. And that's something which needs to be also looked at in, you know, in this particular sector. So I think there's tremendous potential there. Differences were observed between communities, which is quite obvious, between provinces. But also what we have seen is further the intensity of the differences, and why is Why are some regions more vulnerable as compared to others? Why are some communities more vulnerable as compared to others? And this whole exercise helps in, you know, this mapping of the vulnerability helps in prioritizing. For example, in most of these cases, or the departments or the governments have very limited resources. So when they have to start prioritizing adaptation, you know, where do they start? Which provinces? Which communities? So this kind of mapping gives prioritization and also the use. This is just not a comparison, but just to put together how's the, you know, situation across the cases. And as we see, there is a varying degree of vulnerability in terms of the area affected, the production, livelihoods and income. And the vulnerability varies, you know, from moderate to very serious. And also further, if we go into more analysis, we could see why some communities are highly vulnerable. For example, in case of milkfish in the Philippines, we see the vulnerability is quite serious as compared to others. And even in milkfish case, one province, one of the cases was much more vulnerable as compared to others. It might be because of, you know, the proximity to the coastline or proximity to the river or the location, etc. So I think these are very good outputs from the particular tasks, which gives a good, you know, situation analysis. We have been quite detailed in coming up with some guidelines for policy recommendations. For example, we looked at the different cases. The inputs were taken from different activities, both quantitative and qualitative information, and based on that, tried to define these guidelines for the policy. And also the stakeholders that could be responsible and that could be more you know, relevant for adapting. We did come up with some interesting, you know, in the different cases, which could be also, you know, a good example to learn from each other. I'll not go into detail because we have, I think, the case study partners will be presenting them in more details. These are for different cases. I have one table which compares or which puts information across these four cases. Some interesting observations: if you look at Philippines, there is already climate field school at the provincial level. And we heard that the school is getting very good feedback, and there's a lot of other provinces which are trying to come and look at the experience, the good experience. And they already have some training activities going on, but I think there is a potential for introducing more courses. And as we have seen from the interaction with the school there, that there are you know, some more needs for training, and that's where we could contribute to. There is also a coordinating body at the province level, which is the Provincial Disaster Risk Management Council, which has a legal mandate. And as you see from the recommendations, one of the main recommendations was that there should be an integrated body or a single body that integrates the climate change adaptation measures at the provincial level. And in case of Philippines, there is a body that already exists. So there is no need for, you know, any new such organization. So the message is that can be used already for, you know, climate change adaptation planning and implementation in case of Philippines. Whereas other cases could learn from that. For example, in India or in Vietnam, there was also suggestion from different stakeholders that such a kind of policy needs to come in. Similarly, research, for example, all the cases suggested that there should be more research on issues like, you know, trying to develop new strains, trying to develop new pond designs, etc. There are also agencies working in that area. So I think those agencies should get more role in this targeted climate change research. We also have discussed other issues as mentioned here. In the policy briefs, we have gone into more details. So I think we can discuss much more details tomorrow and also later in the evening when the case studies are being presented in detail. Overall project outputs, which has already been mentioned by the previous speaker, policy briefs, technical briefs. I just would like to conclude my presentation by saying that we need to be careful in making the recommendations, as already we have realized and discussed, that some of them have to be justified. We need to look at what kind of assumptions we have made. Some issues needs further focus and more research. because of the limitations of the time within the project, which also has not been, you know, covered in more detail perhaps. We need to get more feedback from the stakeholders before we, you know, make final recommendations on some issues. And also we have to keep in mind that although our focus has been on climate change, some of the adaptations are very much linked to other issues like the market-related influence or the price and also new policies. Because farmers are also interested in, you know, not just climate change, but how can, you know, their produce or, you know, how does it get influenced by the future markets, the future price fluctuations, etc. So that we did consider those issues, but not to a detailed extent. So I think when we are making the recommendations, we need to put that all in the place. So I think I would like to conclude here, and we can open up the floor for discussion. Thank you.